Well, this morning we are beginning in our cycle of readings from the Torah. We are beginning Deuteronomy, Devarim as it's called. And this week's Torah portion begins the book of Deuteronomy, or in Hebrew, Devarim, meaning words, in the weekly cycle of these readings from the law, the Torah. The key word in the first sentence of the passage becomes the title of the reading. Devarim means words, and the book opens up this way. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel across the Jordan in the wilderness. As a literary document, Deuteronomy follows the structural pattern of these ancient Near Eastern treaties that were made between kings. Typically, there would have been a war between this nation and that nation, represented by this king and that king. The battle would ensue, and at the end of the battle, you had the victor and you had the vanquished, or the suzerain and the vassal, if you're into the Middle Ages stuff, okay? Either you had a winner and a loser, whatever. But the kings would come together at the end of battle, and they would work out the terms of a treaty, a covenant. And then there would be a ceremony marking the ratification of that covenant. And they would actually take animal halves. They would sacrifice animals, they would cut them in half and put the halves opposite each other and make this aisleway. And then the two kings representing the two nations would walk side by side between those animals, the implication being, should either of us violate the terms of this covenant, let that one meet with the fate of these animals. It was a very serious and solemn ceremony. But the documents themselves, the treaty documents, followed a rather predictable pattern. There's a preamble where you're introducing who the parties involved in the covenant are. You have a historical prologue where it's recounted the events that led up to this day. And then you have the terms of the covenant. And Deuteronomy actually follows that pattern, and it shouldn't surprise us, since Devarim is a treaty, a covenant between God and Israel. Like those ancient treaty documents, it opens with a preamble, God and Israel, right? So there are the parties. And then it recounts the historical events leading up to this gathering to affirm the covenant. And so God talks about how he brought us out of Eretz Mitzrayim, the land of Egypt. He set us free. He sent the plagues. He brought us to this place. The opening five verses of Deuteronomy chapter 1 essentially are that preamble. And then the parties, most of the rest of the book contains a recapping of the events from when we left Egypt to when we first approached Canaan, and then our disobedience there, and then our having to turn around and schlep back out into the wilderness for 40 years. But it also recounts our victorious wars with Sihon and Og, the kings of Heshbon and Bashan, and the beginning of the conquest of the land. Deuteronomy opens, oddly enough, with a reminder of our dismal failure. Verse 2 says, it's 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. Now, geographically, Kadesh Barnea represented the threshold of the promised land. It's like there's the doorway into the land. Yet, verse 3 goes on to say, and it came about in the 40th year. Are you kidding me? It's 11 days' journey? And then it says, 40 years later. Knew we should have brought the GPS with us. But no, it wasn't about getting lost. It was about disobedience. Now, somebody hearing these words for the first time would be shocked and ask, why on earth did it take 40 years to travel what ought to have taken 11 days? What, did they set up a committee and that's what took so long? But that wasn't it either. What happened was that we disobeyed God's directive. God commanded us, saying, see, I've placed the land before you. Go in and possess it. We decided instead to send an advance party in to check out the situation first. The result, 10 of the 12 spies brought back a discouraging report. Oh, to be sure, the land was lovely, they said, but the 10 spies did not believe that the battle belongs to the Lord, and their words frightened our people into giving up before we'd even started. We complained and began accusing Moses and God of having evil intent. This in spite of our having witnessed firsthand God's great deliverance through the Red Sea and the great pillar of fire and cloud guiding us. Adonai was justifiably angry at our rebellion. He commanded us, saying, "Turn around and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea." So we had our chance. We didn't believe him. He says, "Okay, turn around." "No, wait," we said, because now suddenly the prospect of spending 40 years schlepping in the Sinai desert, you know, "No, wait, we can do this. We can do this. We would go up and fight the Canaanites after all." But God warned us not to do it. We had had our chance and had refused, and now he would not go with us. But we decided to fight anyway. The result, we were driven back and chased out of the land, and many of our people, thousands actually, many of our people were needlessly killed that day. And so when we finally decided to obey God, we turned to go back to the wilderness, defeated and despairing, and our numbers tragically diminished. If that was the end of the story, it would be discouraging indeed. But it wasn't the end of the story. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy exists precisely because God is a God of second chances, and third, and fourth. Yeah, some of you can relate to that right along with me. He preserved us in the wilderness. He brought the next generation back to Canaan to successfully conquer it. There would have been no covenant, no treaty, had God simply written Israel off. And you know, today there are people who have done just that. There are some people who have written Israel off. Oh, they had their chance. They rejected Yeshua. They're out. As though they never bothered to read Romans 9, 10, and 11. But the mere fact that we have this document demonstrates that God is a God of second chances. He is committed to Israel, and he's committed to you if you are in a covenant relationship with him through Yeshua the Messiah. Messiah Yeshua is the one sent to redeem mankind, and being joined to him means that God is committed to the training process in you. You come into the new covenant and you're not just some free agent, free to do whatever you feel like doing. You're brought into the new covenant and now begins your training. I'm thinking of the Matrix. Neo is set free from the Matrix, but now he begins the training. Okay, so those of you who didn't see the movie, I'm sorry. But when you're in this covenant relationship with the living God, he commits to putting you through the process of training and molding. Sometimes it isn't pleasant. My question is, are you committed to the process as well? If so, even the discipline we sometimes have to endure is a discipline that we can embrace, being convinced of his love for us. But there's a warning here as well. A warning that we not refuse him and turn away. You and I are expected to learn from Israel's mistakes. The scriptures have been wondrously preserved in large part so that this generation and those who came before and those, God willing, who will come after might not have to suffer similarly from disobedience. The author of the letter to the Messianic Jews, better known as Hebrews, quotes from Psalm 95. Remember I told you that Psalm 95 was something of a theme for us this morning. And listen to what he wrote. "Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me, as in the day of trial in the wilderness, where your fathers tried me by testing me and saw my works for 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with this generation." He went on to write, "Take care, brethren, lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God." If you have not yet trusted in Yeshua, Jesus the Messiah, then you have unfinished business with God. And I urge you to transact that business today, while it's still called today. And if you are a believer, do not turn away from the process. Sometimes it's painful, but it is for our good. Don't forsake that disciplining process. It is the one who endures that proves to be Yeshua's disciple. It's important that we finish well. Amen.